ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sports coverage of the NRL Premiership.
NRL Saturday.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Our first guest today was a legend with the Melbourne Storm. He was with South Sydney. He has been for Queensland and Australia. And now with what he's doing with this Stick With It campaign through the Goanna Academy, and it's the great Greg Inglis. He joins us on the line right now. G'day, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, fellas. How are you?
Mate, couldn't be better. Mate, we've got a bright, sunny day. We're in Mudgee. Nothing could be better.
Nothing could be better. Nice, crispy, fresh air. I heard MC was cutting it up on the dance floor last night.
I think we need a bit more information.
Can you tell him to stop?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind giving you a bit more info about that there. I was just in Melbourne last night and, just getting on the call and hearing these little stories. So,
See, Michael, you're used to
do a
grilling.
Bit more digging around it.
Michael's used to grilling people like you, GI, to find out what's been doing. You, last night, Mudgee.
Yes.
What were you doing? Were you tripping the light fantastic? What were you doing?
Nah, just a few quiet ones with my wife and other types.
And other types. What's other types mean? Were you being a man of the people?
Yes.
Nice. People's champion. People's champion.
Yeah, that's it. That's me. Yeah. Back to more important things, Andrew.
It couldn't be more opposite than that, Greg, I promise you. Tell us about the Stick With It campaign, Greg.
Yeah, so it's our second year running it. It's, we know mental health is an invisible diagnosis. So, you can't really see it unless you can't really mention things around unless you feel comfortable around certain situations and certain people. So this just sheds a light on mental health and reducing the suicide rate that we have in Australia currently at the moment. So, I've been doing this work for 6 years now, and it's, I love it. I always talk about your two P's, your passion and your purpose. And, I got lost after I retired, but now I found my two P's. So, I'm loving what I do, and, I'm glad that the support in the broader community across Australia is jumping on board this year too.
Is this, Greg, mainly aimed at Indigenous communities, or is it for everybody?
No, it's catered to all. It's catered to all. I believe no one should suffer alone. We all need help in our life, whether we like it or not. So this is no different. It's just, making sure that we put our lives first and put ourselves first.
Greg, one of the things I'd really love you to share, and I know you've probably got plenty of stories, but it'd be good to hear one, story where you've actually helped an individual, get back to normal life.
Yeah, so this one sticks out, like you said, there's a fair few, but, speaking of males, and we're not very good at admitting that we are not coping well, I was doing a program in Deception Bay, which is just north of Brisbane, and this 52-year-old was in the program, and by the third session, he started breaking down and started, talking about his feelings, and he goes, I didn't realise how much of a hole I was in until I came into this program. So, I checked in with him about a month after that there, and he's doing really well for himself. Got himself a job and got himself back on track with what he wants to do in life.
So inspiring to know that you're actually changing people's lives for the better rather than, ticking boxes and all that sort of stuff in this part of mental health side of things. Can I also just tap into your rugby league IQ a little bit, mate?
Yeah.
Because I know that I'd love for you to get, or your opinion on how you see the game and the trajectory of the game at the moment. It's obviously evolved a fair bit since you retired. What are your thoughts on footy at the moment?
Yeah, well, we have a beautiful product. We've had this product for a number of years now. How do we want to showcase it more? I think we're doing a great job at it. We probably could do a little bit of, I don't know, we can change things and we can learn things. I think this year will probably the biggest learning ones around it. So it's around the six again, whether it's a big, massive talking point, whether we cut it out, whether we don't, whether we bring it back in. Do we cut down the bunker time? Do we give the referees more opportunities to actually, make decisions on the spot? But the way the game is, and that's the way the game's being played, we've seen really, really good players, individual players shine as well. I think, hopefully, well, when these other two new teams come in, it'll be even more bigger and better product. I actually got asked this question by Harry Grant last night. He goes, is there a team that you're looking at to watch that could take it? And I couldn't think of one. I couldn't think of a team that's current at the moment because everyone's up in the air. We know who's going to play finals, but who's going to perform in those finals? You know, Penrith's always up there, but they've hit their slump at the right time to pick up towards the back end. Like, yeah, it's always an interesting one. But it was a really good question for him.
G.I., you mentioned earlier you struggled to find your purpose, right, post-playing. How did you find it?
Well, I found it because I went back home. I went back home to where I'm from. Up in Maxwell there, started a really good core group of friends. This is after I came out of my rehab stint, you know, and went back home and just really sat around and thought what I wanted to do, what I want to bring to light. My psychiatrist told me in one of my sessions that my journey and my story can help change a life and save a life. So that's what I did. I went back home and really worked on myself and getting back on around good family and friends really helped me along the way.
Obviously, you know, you've got the Goanna Academy and things like that, but do you do anything directly related with the NRL, NRL clubs? Or I know you did a little bit with the Tigers, NRLW a couple of years ago, but you're doing much at the moment?
No, I'm not. I'm not actually. You know, I think that's the beauty about not being actually bunkered into one club. I get to go around and get to talk to various athletes and different clubs. And I really love what I'm doing. I enjoy what I'm doing. And I'd like to give a little bit of tats here and there to certain players across both women's and men's.
Matt, you've spent a great part of your working life dealing with mental health and improving people's lot who are struggling in that area. How important is it overall, do you think, to have people like Greg speaking out and becoming actively involved in these pursuits to give others confidence to talk about it or seek help?
It's not only Greg's... Sorry, mate. It's not only GI's exposure and profile. It's also he's had a lived experience of it. And that's where he can actually tell people, not from a textbook. He's talking to them from a real-life experience. Sorry, Greg, I interrupted there, bud.
No, that's totally fine. You're exactly right. You know, I've got staff on board full-time that have lived experience. So, like you said, we're not sitting there reading from a textbook. I think our different ways, because we work in community, work for community, we got to bring that to light. And, you know, every talk that I do is totally different to the last one that I presented. So, yeah, we just cater to what's needed in our community. Sadly, I've been in communities where there's been a 12-year-old that's taken their own life. And, you know, I've had to go in and deliver something. And, you know, this thing was about self-esteem. But we just brushed that and really put in services. We rang up local headspace, rang up local doctors and that, just to put faces to their names and come in and talk about what they do.
And for listeners listening, and that's what you just said there about it's not cut and paste. It's the fact that you're actually responding to the event. I think that's, you know, where people should reach out to your organisation, Greg, is that if they really have those challenges, you're not treating like what the outline of the diagnosis is. You're actually talking to the person.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, for some weird reason, even as adults, human beings, we have a complicated life for no reason at all. So, you know, it's no different to this here. We go in, talk to individuals, like you said, they talk to a group, and now that group, we work on the individual, working on as a person. We strip everything back, simple, stupid, really, and then work, like I said, work on our self-esteem, because we don't really stop and think about our own, well, us as people, as individuals, because we always want to get to the next thing, and just it's a snowball effect. So we work, like you said, on the individual person themselves.
Well, we can certainly recommend people check it out at your academy, which is goannaacademy.org.au, the Stick With It campaign. So this is about strapping tape, and at any sporting club, any sporting person, male or female, can take part in, right?
Yeah, everyone. It caters to all. It caters to all. It doesn't have to be mainly sport, you know. Brad Fittler and his couple of his Hogs boys tape it on their bikes this morning. They're going for a two-night ride, so they sent me a photo of that being on there. So it's just a sign of coming together, sign of, you know, for one cause and one outcome. That's reduced the suicide rate in Australia.
All right. Good on you, Greg. Keep up the great work. Appreciate your time today, and maybe not only a successful weekend with the Stick With It campaign, but ongoing, mate. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on.
And to learn more, you can head to goannaacademy.org.au. goannaacademy.org.au. And if you are struggling, help is always available via Lifeline. That number is 13 11 14. 13 11 14 for Lifeline.
Rugby League is on your radio.
NRL Saturday on ABC Sport.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Michael Carrianis, I'm Andrew Moore here, and we've got about 20 minutes or so before Penrith plays Canberra here at beautiful Glen Willow Stadium in Mudgee. And the Penrith CEO, Matt Cameron, has joined us in the box. How are you, Matt? Good to see you.
Hello, boys. Thanks for having me this afternoon.
Mate, you look a bit weary. Has this another regional trip gotten to you?
No, I've just run up the stairs. I'm just talking to a fan downstairs. Haven't seen him for a couple of years. But no, it's good. It's been all good. Great weekend.
And you've been here, MC was saying, since Tuesday. So even though this is almost a home game because your own home ground is being rebuilt, you guys have taken that responsibility seriously, obviously.
Yeah, we've obviously we had the opportunity with formerly Bluebet, now Hello World Stadium, being redeveloped. We took four games away this year, three games away this year. And obviously, you know, we have a pretty big commitment, yeah, both to Bathurst and Mudgee at the moment, contractually. Bathurst goes for a little bit longer, but, you know, I think I'd have to get someone to check for me, but I think we're the only club at the moment that's doing it.
You are.
And I just think it's such a fantastic thing out here, you know, in central New South Wales. We've had our foundation out here since Tuesday, engaged in schools programs, disability programs. It's been enormous, and we love coming out here.
I should say the only New South Wales club to do it. And thank goodness, because you know, we keep saying, I think we say it to you every time we bump into you at Bathurst or here, that, you know, gone are the days we'd go to NRL games in Wagga Wagga and Dubbo and Coffs Harbour and Tamworth. They'd become, it seemed, a regular part. We were getting more towards every club having a tie-in with a regional area, and it's gone by the wayside. Do you see that coming back again, or is it getting unrealistic due to Magic Round and Vegas and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, I think it's a realistic thing if clubs want to actually do the work. You know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but we've made a conscious decision. Obviously, geographically, it works for us, particularly with Bathurst, because it's over the hill, pretty much. But I think, too, you know, you're talking about the broadcast deal and, you know, the money that is about to flow into the game. I think there's no reason why part of that can't get carved off in some way, shape or form. It might not necessarily be a game, but it might be a commitment from each club to adopt a region or a district and service that region or district.
Have you had those conversations with the NRL, Matty, about what the long-term future may be for regional venues?
Nah, we're just happy just to be looking after what Penrith need to look after at the moment. But happy to have that conversation. And if the NRL are looking for a blueprint, or another club is looking for a blueprint on how to do it, like, we'll give them anything they want.
That's been there since you started with this association in Bathurst, though. So much different to what we'd ever seen before. The blueprint's been there. You guys have been doing it.
Yeah, and it helps us also, I suppose, from a recruitment retention point of view. Obviously, we've got a number of boys in the squad that have come through the regional programs, not necessarily just, you know, Bathurst, but we do a little bit with the Western Rams out there. So we've got a bit of a touch point in Dubbo, Parks, Forbes, Orange, Bathurst, Mudgee. Mm. It's superb. And what it does to the town, obviously, I was in town this morning just walking up and down the streets, and the town is buzzing with rugby league, and I think that's a great thing.
On the field, Matty, obviously you guys sit in on top of the ladder. A few players still missing for you guys. Mitch Kenny, Dylan Edwards, Luke Garner is probably the main trio. Do you have an update on those three?
All three. We're projecting to be back before the finals. Obviously, each one's probably a little bit of a distant situation. I think, and clearly I'm not performance director, I think at a pinch, if this was a semi-final, Dylan would have played.
Yep.
And then, obviously, Mitch. He's had the ankle injury. It's been a little bit of a hiccup in the middle there. And I think we're on track there, so we're forecasting him definitely back before the finals. And then obviously with Luke, you know, Luke's just week to week at the moment. But again, we think he'll play semi-final football.
Talking about big decisions as an organisation, I guess on the recruitment or retention side of things, you're in the process and a lot of attention around that. How's that going for you?
Well, I had a full head of hair at the start of the year.
That's a lie.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's interesting. And obviously at the moment, you know, it's everyone knows where we sit from a recruitment retention point of view. Obviously there's some big players in our roster that are coming off. And you know, Shane Elfer's doing a great job in that space at the moment. Some really productive conversations with a whole host of managers at the moment. We're reasonably confident that we'll get some wins there. You know, but the reality is, you know, you don't have to be Einstein to work out that, you know, the value that our players, the remuneration that we, you know, the game values our players at the moment, we would love to keep them all. I probably feel at some point in time there might be one or two that we might just have to, you know, we'll just get priced out within the market of what we want to do. And, you know, I've been pretty open in respect to those players in particular. Every player that's come through, you know, in this cohort at the moment has absolutely earned the right to decide, you know, which way they want to jump with their future, because they deserve that.
You need to stop developing players so well, mate. I mean that seriously. It's a real credit.
It's a special cohort that have all come through together at the moment.
Yeah. Can I ask you one more question about the future? Obviously, with Pete Wallace coming on as head coach, what sort of developmental processes, obviously being under Ivan's probably the best, you know, best process you could possibly get, you know, for a future head coach. Is there any other things that you're helping Pete out with?
Yeah, for sure. And you've hit the nail on the head. When Ivan came to us at a point in time and indicated that he didn't want to continue after the end of this current contract, which is the end of next year, you know, the board and senior management, like, we made a conscious decision that we were going to anoint the new coach now, so there was a great window there for them to operate or continue to operate. And I think if you look at our club, we've got a pretty we've got a bit of a philosophy that we use not only with the roster but also with the staff, and it's built from within. And we feel Pete absolutely fits that. You know, when we spoke to the board about, you know, informed the board that Ivan wasn't going to continue his or extend his contract, and then we'd sort of had conversations with Pete about coming on board. Like, it was literally a half-hour conversation. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a process. It was, the process has been ongoing for years now. It was just, he was always going to be the next guy up. And I was in the room when the coach informed the group that he wasn't extending, and obviously there was a lull in the room. And at the same time, he said that, you know, the club had made the decision to appoint Pete, and the room just erupted. Which is great. You know, it's a great. We don't need the vindication, but it's a great vindication for the decision that we've made as a club.
What role do you see Ivan having going forward, Matty?
I don't know. You might need to speak to Ivan about that. But obviously, he's indicated that he has an interest in rep football. He's also indicated to us that
At the Panthers.
He wants to remain engaged with us at the club. You know, we've spoken. He's always had a little bit of an aspiration to mentor a new coach into the game. And I think if you look at our game at the moment, Matt, you've experienced it. You know, like, that would be a tremendous thing for any first-time coach in the NRL coming in, to have someone of Ivan's calibre, you know, to be helping, to be able to make a phone call and shoot the breeze with someone over, you know, over things that are new experiences for a new coach. So maybe as a game we don't do enough of that. I don't know. I can't speak on behalf of that.
Can you take us behind the curtain a little bit, Matt, without getting specific details about individuals? But when you've got such a process ahead to try and re-sign some star players, not only star players, but guys who've been here forever throughout their NRL career, is this conversations, are they being had every day? Is it once a week? Is it once a month? How intense is that, and how big a part of it is of Penrith's management day?
Yeah, for sure. So when probably the trigger that brought all these conversations to the fore was Jerome's decision about his commitment to the PNG Chiefs. That sort of got, you know, like, there was commentary in the background. We've got a lot of players off contract. How are we going to handle it? And then also when Jerome signed with PNG Chiefs, it probably brought that conversation, you know, a little bit more advanced, because the pure fact that the Chiefs now were front and centre for a lot of our players, and a lot of the commentary was around, you know, why wouldn't a Penrith Panther player go and investigate that opportunity? So Shane and I and the coach sat down. We really, you know, think of it in three ways. There were players that came to us and said, that I want to stay, I want to get a deal done straight away. There were players that said, I'm about to go into Origin, I don't want to talk about it. Mm. And, you know, there's players that are interested in testing the market. Now, when we say interested in testing the market, it doesn't necessarily going to leave because they're still contracted for next year. And, you know, the November 1 is a date that I know everyone sort of gets excited about outside of our club, but it's just a date on the calendar, the way we look at it. So, obviously, Tom Jenkins, great example, wanted to get a deal done, got a deal done. Mitch Kenny wanted to get a deal done, got a deal done.
Right.
Obviously, the Origin players just wanted to get through Origin. Once that sort of that little window has collapsed, obviously, Shane's been in pretty robust conversations with their various management groups about, you know, what the steps are there. We don't have anyone at the moment that has absolutely just come out and just said, oh, I'm not interested in talking to you until I want to test the market November 1, which is really pleasing for us. So.
Because that's been a narrative about Nathan Cleary, hasn't it?
Correct. Nathan's never said that he wanted to test the market. Nathan said that he's never been off contract.
Mm.
And that narrative has been spun into a one November conversation. So, you know, as I said, Shane's working really well with George Mimas at the moment. You know, those conversations are very productive. They'll keep going. If someone thinks we're going to announce it next week, that's clearly not going to happen. But we are conscious also, where the team is at the moment, we've got a little bit of internal policy. We get to a point in time in the schedule where we just go, that's it. We're not
now
having any more conversations because we're trying to win a comp.
Yeah.
I don't want to be responsible in hindsight for, you know, an unproductive final series. And when we drill into it, it was like there was just too much white noise around contract extensions and those sort of things. So we're comfortable that if we, you know, we've probably got a little bit of a window for a couple of weeks. If we can't get it all nutted out there, we're comfortable just to put it on hold and pick up the conversations after the playing group's finished. So.
Joined here in the broadcast box by Penrith CEO, or as Luke Lewis used to call him, woodwork Mr. Cameron. Matt Cameron, the
yes.
Penrith CEO. On the PNG Chiefs, can I get your take on that from an NRL club CEO's perspective? Because as a fan, I'm very excited about the prospects of what's going to happen at Port Moresby. Equal with horrified at the unfair advantage they seem to have with the government money of $600 million and the tax-free dollars. It is. It's a leg up on every other club in the comp. What's your take on that?
First and foremost, I had the opportunity to go up there about 18 months ago, and it was probably the most humbling experience I've ever had. I went and spent 4 or 5 days up there when Andrew Hill was putting the bid together. And you can, you know, was fortunate enough to meet the Prime Minister, get a tour of facilities or, you know, plans facilities and where their grounds are and those sorts of things. You're right. I think most people have worked it out now when we talk about their cap is the same as our cap. The advantage is the taxation that sits after that. So I think a lot of people at the start thought there was going to be some disequal cap treatment. You know, they're still going to have to spend 97.5% of $11.7 million or whatever the cap is by then. It's what happens with the tax department after that is where the advantage lies. So, and clearly there needs to be...
pretty big advantage.
Well, it is, yeah. I don't think anyone disagrees with that. But I think, talking to a lot of the other CEOs, I think there's a genuine belief that a rising tide lifts all boats. And if we can get a really strong Perth and a really strong PNG and a really strong Team 20, every club and the game will benefit from that and will be in a remarkable position 5 years from now or 10 years from now as a game.
Taking the conversation back to Penrith, and you talked about not having distractions towards the back end of the year. And I know you're not in the performance staff, as you already shared with us, Matt, but I look at the Panthers side and is it an assumption I'm making or they've just been through a high load period and you know, Ivan's just getting them ready for the back end of the season?
I just think, you know, when you think, Matt, when you coached, you know, your pre-season would have been 16 weeks on average, you know. The reality is for a certain cohort of this group, for nearly 6 seasons in a row, they've gone from playing in a grand final to representing their nation to meeting the RLPA obligations of having 9 weeks off to then meeting the RLPA obligations of then having 6 weeks of training. And that almost dovetails straight into their next game. So now, like, we've got players that are doing 6 and 8 week pre-seasons. And I think if you looked at the cumulative effect of that over multiple years, you know, I look at these boys train, I watch them play, and I just think, honestly, I'll watch Yowie tonight and I'll just shake my head and I think he's been on the hamster wheel for 6 seasons in a row now with... little gaps at the end and high performance periods with Origin. So it's It's a credit. I don't want to embarrass them, but I feel it's a credit to our performance staff, how we manage that. But it is different now.
So it's great that you share that with listeners so they understand, you know, the load that these players go through. And that's not just physical, is it? Obviously, it's mental load as well.
And, you know, these boys have been out here since Tuesday afternoon. They've been in public engagements. They've done kids' clinics. They've done TV ads. They've done radio ads. You know, they've signed autographs, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, you're right. It's not just the football. Kev Kingston was here, our wellbeing manager. He would say that week is 10,080 minutes. The game is 80. It's the 10,000 minutes in the week that we've got to manage to, you know, to get the product that we're looking for every week.
Just finally, Matt, we need to let you go, obviously, but, what, 3 months ago, MC was carrying on like a pork chop about the roof at the new stadium.
Oh, no, not the roof.
What's the latest with the development there?
It's going to be fabulous, Mike.
Well, will he stay dry if we kick him out of the box?
No. I went to Bunnings and bought a little plastic seat and a card table for him to sit on the side.
Perfect.
Just a very quick one, just when you talk about context and comparison. The old stadium, on that eastern grandstand, which is the one that comes under a little bit of criticism, had 1,280 covered seats available for members and general public. The new grandstand will have in excess of 4,000 seats undercover.
And the winner is...
So
we'll see next year.
But that's more than double, Michael, for you and your math.
It's an X. How much is a stadium worth? It should have double the amount of people undercover, Andrew. Thank you.
I'm not sure if I can win this. So.
We'll let you get on that.
It'll be a great stadium for the people of Penrith and any NRL game that's played down there, plus the other 10 or 12 pieces of content that will be brought to Penrith community.
And it'll be right for round one next year.
At the moment. Yep. It's over there on Wednesday with the builders. They're talking about an end of December completion, a government handover in January, and yep, we'll be round one, round two. That's the plan.
Good for the people of Penrith and all the other areas you want. And we've got plenty of side on ice too.
Yes.
Thanks, Matt.
Need a roof.
No worries. Padded chair or just plastic?
Padded.
Okay.
Thank you.
He might need a padded room.
Thanks, boys. And thanks for your support during the year too.
Thanks,
really
mate.
Appreciate it.
Good on you, mate. Good to see you. Matt Cameron, the CEO of Penrith, and really unabashed fan of the way they treat regional areas, because thank God for them. In New South Wales, at least, no other club seems to care all that much about promoting the game in these regional areas.
ABC Sports coverage of NRL Saturday.
Rugby League is on your radio.
ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
All right, shall we talk about last night's
games?
Yes,
please.
All right, I was down in the Gong with Luke Lewis and Johnny Gibbs watching. Actually, it ended up being quite an entertaining game. I know you boys were in different stages of heading down to Mudgee. In the end, the Dolphins win the game, but they were made to earn it. 28-22, the crowd 9,218. It was 5-4, but a number of times through the game, it was in the balance. Selwyn Cobbo had a great game for the Dolphins, and he scored on either side of halftime. 8 short of halfway, 8 in from the Western touchline, played to Katoa, centre left to Bostock, ran straight through Toby Couchman, but right across field. Then he linked up brilliantly with Cobbo, over the 30, takes on Gutherson. Gutherson missed him, Selwyn Cobbo, swan dives over to score a long distance try. 6 out from the goal line, Dolphins on the attack, Plath. Works it away left. Donoghue links up Katoa. Nikarima. Farnworth tip on to Cobbo. This time he gets on the outside of Setu 2. And he's over to score the try. Selwyn Cobbo. He has a double. ABC Player of the Year points from Luke Lewis last night. 3 points went to Herbie Farnworth, the Dolphins centre. 2 points to Dragons fullback Clint Gutherson. I think it could have been his best game as a Dragon. And 1 point went to the Dolphins' second rowers, having a fine season as well, Kuikefu Finafuiaki, from that game last night. 5-4, Matt. I know you were at a function and then on the road down here to Mudgee, but same old story for the Dragons, firstly. They put in a really good effort for most of the game, but just fell a little short again.
Yeah, and as you say, it's a bit of a recurring story for them, and I think it holds them in good stead, particularly with the amount of young players that are getting, you know, field time for them, is that the NRL is such a difficult competition, and their pack has got to be one of the youngest forward packs I've seen in a long time. So while it's tough at the moment for the club and the supporters, I really believe that there's a big reason for optimism in the future.
And MC, in terms of the Dolphins, who went into the game in fifth position, and remember, they're, 3 weeks removed from getting beat 66-0. Isaiah Katoa returned from the wrist injury for the Dolphins. He did look a bit clunky. He looked like his timing was just a little bit out, but obviously huge to have him back. They were far from their best, but what they did do still was score some unbelievable tries and remind us that at any point they can turn it on and score against you.
Yeah, there's that beautiful pass from Fini Fuiaki who put, was it Cody Nikurima through the gap on that left-hand side of the field, and it was just outstanding. The way they can play with the ball at speed and their transfer of passing, it makes them a huge threat consistently. And, you know, if they can win the arm wrestle, or at least match the arm wrestle, if they get into a shootout with sides, they're going to beat a lot of teams in this competition. Their dips have been poor, but with Katoa back now, obviously that helps them. A few players post-Origin as well. So, yeah, I still think I wouldn't write them off. I thought, you know, last night was a decent performance, but they've got a bit more improvement in them if they're going to be a genuine premiership threat, which I think they can be.
They should be with that talent, Matty. But how confident are you about them making a deep push into September?
Well, having Katoa back makes a big difference to them. And you know, just speaking to you, it didn't sound like he was in great form last night. But you know, that's understandable after being out for as long as he has. Once he gets some, you know, fluency back into his play and a little bit more confidence and get some game time, I think he'll make a big difference. I can't see them being a threat, to be honest with you.
Really?
No,
Did they make the top four?
Why not, Matty? What do you see?
I just see vulnerability defensively in them. And when it gets to semi-final time and, you know, the refs tend to put their whistle away a little bit, that, you know, that vulnerability defensively can be really exploited. So that's my only genuine concern with them.
Interesting. What about you, Michael?
No, I understand, definitely understand Matty's point. I just think they've got so many points in them, and they're points of the field where they can attack from is arguably the best in the competition.
Yep.
But as Matty said, their flimsiness in the middle could come back to haunt them. I was big on them before the start of the year. Then at the midway point, I was like, okay, this is a side that can finish in the top four. Then they had these really poor, you know, string of performances, and I'm not convinced after last night they'll play finals footy. But you know, they're below a top four side at the moment for me.
Yeah, and yet they're equal on points with third and fourth at the moment. So there's still a chance they could make the top four. They've got a big game next week against Brisbane at Lang Park.
If you look at, say, the Roosters model, what Trent Robinson does really well is build the season so they're playing their best footy at the back end of the season. And they're still ridiculously not playing their best footy quite, albeit the other night. How could you argue that point? I just feel like they've got improvement in them. And that's really what has to happen now with the Dolphins, is that they really need to go, okay, this is the type of footy we need to be playing. And they need to, if it was me, they need to put their whole attention for the next... They don't need to put their attention on attack because they do it naturally, yeah. Right? Their full attention and preparation needs to be on defence.
All right, at Amy Park in Melbourne, it was a huge game for Canterbury Bankstown last night. And Melbourne, bearing in mind they didn't have Munster, Jerome Hughes pulled out with hamstring soreness, no Harry Grant. They've slipped, you know, kind of well outside the top eight again. It's really almost impossible to see them making the finals, whereas Canterbury's been on an upward trajectory over the last 5 or 6 weeks. But for a while, it looked like they're in trouble. Midway through the second half, Melbourne led, 22-22? 22 points to 20, I should say. In the end, the Bulldogs got the cash, 36 points to 22. 3 points in the ABC Player of the Year from Ryan Hoppen to Bulldogs captain Stephen Crichton. 2 points went to second row Viliami Kikau, who's made a great return from injury, and 1 point to winger Jacob Carraz. But it was Stephen Crichton who scored a double.
Haywood off to Galvin, Salmon on to Kikau. Kikau for the corner now. He darts infield in fact for the Watson and Meaney. Offloads back here for Crichton, and the captain goes crashing over. Nine out from that northern line. Haywood across now for Crichton. And now Crichton in fact dummies and goes himself. It's a captain's try late in the game to put the exclamation point on a classy win.
Yeah, and in the end, MC, they had to win Canterbury, and they did get the job done.
Yeah, they did. And, you look at the form line of sides in and around the eight at the moment. Obviously, North Queensland were abysmal last week. Oh, on Thursday night, you've got Manly's erratic form. You've got the injuries to Newcastle. And Canterbury just quietly going about their business at the moment. And
they're just in the 1-1, aren't they? And they're just... not cruising, but they look like they're going to cruise into the finals.
And I call their game when they played the Tigers. And, you know, when you're getting Crichton and Kikau in your top two players and they're starting to build the team around it, you can see the confidence starting to grow, particularly when your leaders are playing that type of footy.
Melbourne, I kind of feel for, Matthew. You say used to them being a dominant side in the competition, but the lack of troops are just adding up and adding up and adding up.
Well, I looked at it. If you just had the team of players that are injured playing, yeah, they beat the team that they've got out on the field. So, and again, the fact that they competed for that game for a long period just shows the quality of coaching that they get.
Yeah, Melbourne, they're going to miss out, aren't they?
Oh, they're gone. They're gone. And it's funny, like, it's not. I was speaking to Cam Munster during the week, and his worst season was a qualifying final prior to this. So he's played 11 years, whatever it is, in first grade, full seasons in first grade. He's made the prelim 10 times.
Do you love rugby league? NRL Saturday on ABC Sport.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio.
And ABC Listen.
Can't touch
this. Time to find out all the latest rugby league news
and speculation.
Here's Michael Carayannis with MC's
Hammer Time.
Oh, James, back in the studio. Righto, Michael Carayannis, what do we have?
Yeah, a bit of player sign-in news. Jaden Brayley's taken up a two-year deal with the West Tigers. He's on contract with the Canberra Raiders for next season, but will join the Tigers on a two-year deal after being granted a release from the Raiders. And that sets a train in motion with the Raiders. They've got a bit of salary cap concern. Corey Horsburgh has been linked with a move to the Broncos. You've got Seb Chris, who's linked to the Warriors as well. So a fair bit of player news out of the Raiders, Andrew.
What is the latest with Corey Horsburgh, though? Because we'd heard that he'd been told he can look elsewhere, and then I'm sure I read that he'd shut that down. He wants to stay at Canberra next year. Where is that at, do you know?
Brisbane. Brisbane want him. Yeah. Corey Jensen's sad retirement during the week has sort of fastened or,
expedite.
Yeah, their need
hastened.
For... Yeah, all those words. The need for another middle. So I think they're going to have another dip at Corey Horsburgh.
I was listening to Corey Jensen have a chat to Q and the team on Thursday night. Just wanted to give him a hug. How awful. How awful that out of the blue your career is suddenly over.
Yeah, terrible. Terrible.
All right, next.
Some good news for the Dragons. They've re-signed the Couchman twins until 2030. So Ryan and Toby, obviously the cornerstone of their forward pack. It's no surprise that since Dean Young has re-signed, that they've re-signed the same management company. So that generally helps a little bit. But they're a gem, the Couchmans. And, they'll turn their attention now to Loko Pacifica Tonga, try and get that done over the next couple of weeks as well.
Because that's another quite dramatic turnaround, isn't it? The interest the Dragons have in him. As 4 weeks ago,
Well, it was the other way around. The Dragons always had an interest in him. It was he felt that he didn't have... It was obviously an issue with Shane Flanagan, right? And maybe Mick Ennis there too, the two coaches that were left the club. As soon as Dean Young got in, he basically played him in first grade and had started him and things like that. So he's very close to Dean Young. So I think that deal will get sorted out as well in the next couple of weeks. So the last one, I'm not sure if it will get done before November 1, is Jacob Halangahu. Otherwise, they've tied down all those young forwards long term.
And finally?
There was some suggestion Talas Duncan could return. He was named on the extended bench for South Sydney. He won't play. So put a line through Talas Duncan. He'll probably return next week. Cam Murray's an outside chance of returning next week. Adam Elliott will play for South Sydney. He's sort of gone under the radar a little bit with injuries, but expect him
to... How many games has he played? A couple?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought it's been more than three, Andrew. He's hardly played this year since joining them from the Newcastle Knights. But and James Tedesco's suggestions, he limped from the field, didn't return after the halftime break. Speaking of Roosters officials today, they're confident that it's nothing major.
So that's... Ankle-related.
Ankle-related.
And we assumed watching when they led 1,000, by 1,000 at halftime, was more precautionary than anything else.
It was.
Is he going to miss any time, do you think?
They don't think so. And if he had scans yesterday, and the scans have come back with no major damage. So
that's good.
If he does miss, it might be a game, but it's not long-term.
Aren't they lucky they've got Cody Ramsey?
How good's he going?
I'm just so elated to see him play the way type of footy he's playing at the moment.
Because you're obviously there at the Dragons when he was going through
I've known him for a long time.
And he's the best story of this year.
Yeah.
He's the best story of this year. The fact that he's not only back playing first grade, but his ability, like he's a first grader, you know, so it's great to see.
Yeah, and his willingness to learn and just, you know, he's just so enamoured the fact that he's around James Tedesco and he gets to learn off the best fullback in the game.
You can just see the joy he has just playing.
Yeah.
And I love the other night because he made plenty of breaks, but, you know, MC would have made breaks against the Cowboys the other night. To see Cody Ramsey get one random shot, apropos nothing, from the eastern touchline well into the game, and he whacked it straight over. It was unreal. On a record-breaking night for Sam Walker. And then Sam took the next few kicks.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.